Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Doc Mills. Today, we're going to be talking to Amanda Yule. She is a certified personal trainer and volleyball coach. And today, we talked about how her, you know, self-reflected strengths and weaknesses affect her job in the sense of, you know, What are the areas that she feels like can be improved upon with working with her clientele, specifically working with older clients, because she lives in Florida. So she works at she does some personal training at a country club, and there's older individuals who are looking to keep moving but don't have necessarily not had all that much experience with lifting weights. How do you navigate that conversation? How do you get them stronger and build their endurance capacity to keep doing the things that they want to do? So we dive deep into that. We talk about her strengths and weaknesses, and I shed a little bit of light because I struggled with similar things whenever I was first starting out. So it was a good chat. Real time update. We're entering phase one of quarantine return. Louisiana's in phase one. I'm pretty sure Florida's in phase one. I'm about to go visit Joseph in West Palm Beach for some Memorial Day festivities. Hopefully they are festive. I bought a cheetah shirt. So yeah, whenever this drops on Memorial Day, you'll probably see it on my story. So let's get right into the episode. Hope you enjoy.
If you're a barbell coach or trainer interested in learning more about the mechanics of lifting, or struggles with programming a client through pain to peak performance, or communication skills to effectively gather intel on your client's previous injuries, this podcast is for you. The Alinea Coaches Podcast exists to elevate strength and conditioning coaches, as well as personal trainers to the highest degree. Co-hosts and barbell coaches turned doctors of physical therapy, William Mills and Joey Rosie, interview coaches and trainers from around the globe on improving mechanics, communication, and programming to better serve their clients as a new line of fitness professional.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Today, I'm going to be chatting with Amanda Yule. She is a certified personal trainer and volleyball coach in Boca Raton, Florida. And what's up, Amanda?
Nothing. Just hanging out on this lovely
quarantine Tuesday.
Yeah. Quarantine Tuesday.
And how do you pronounce? Did I pronounce your last name right?
You did. You did. Just like Soulja Boy says, like Yule.
Okay, got it. That's fantastic. Yeah. How many? Times,
everyone understands it.
How many times have you used that?
Oh God. When did that song come out?
That was like, 2005 or 6?
Yeah. The track team had a fun time with that when I was in the gym, or when I was in the dome in the track. Yeah. Yo, what's up, yo? Yeah. Hey, guys. All the time.
That has a lot of uses, though. You could use it, like, at a bar. You could use it for sports. There's a lot of good stuff with that.
My volleyball kids, I'm Coach AY. Most people call me AY. So if someone calls me Amanda, it's more of like a formal setting, or I work with them. So AY, or like my friends call me AY. Yeah.
Nice.
It's my non-professional name.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. So today we're going to be talking about some strengths and weaknesses of the trainer game as it is for you in 2020. We got some quarantine struggles, and we got some clientele struggles, but we also have some sports strengths. So I was talking to Amanda before we clicked record, and she was explaining that she, because of her background, and I'm going to have you explain your background in sports right after I stop talking, but because of her background in sports, she's super, super passionate and super comfortable with her athletes and with the people on the personal training side of her business that she feels like she connects well with, but she struggles on occasion with her older clientele that are quote unquote afraid to sweat, is how you described it, right?
Yeah.
So we'll get into that, but tell us about your background in volleyball and then how you got into personal training.
Okay, so I played volleyball since I actually went to my middle school tryouts, and I walked into the gym and I was confused because they had a net set up. I was like, I guess we're going through some drills or something in here, but where's the volleyball court? I always was under the understanding that it was beach volleyball. I never knew about indoor until I went to my tryouts in seventh grade. And ever since then, volleyball paid for both of my degrees. Thank God I got a scholarship to a Division I college. And then after I graduated, I got my master's in kinesiology at Augusta State. So I decided coaching wasn't for me at the NCAA level. I still wanted to play. And it's a very time-consuming, very stressful job, actually. Mm-hmm. So I still wanted to play. And then finally found my way back down to South Florida. And was playing. I actually have a torn labrum in my hip. That's kind of why I started to step away from the game, just experiencing all that pain. And I had a personal training.
Playing on beach volleyball circuit?
Yeah, just playing local tournaments and trying to play some of the bigger ones, but never really made it that far.
Mm-hmm.
I tore that, so that was all over. When I graduated my master's, I had a training job at a smaller gym that no longer exists, actually in Knoxville. And I had so much fun training these clients. I had no idea what I was doing. I just come out of my master's. I thought I knew everything and didn't have to get a certification to hold that job. So it worked out well for me and everything was going great. And then started coaching volleyball more. So I stepped away from training. And then last year I decided to get my NASM and try training again. And got this wonderful job at the Polo Club at Boca Raton. I'm super enjoying it. The people there are always an adventure to work with. So it's every day I'm walking into something different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I'm not that office type, 9 to 5. It's fun. I really enjoy what I do. So, but obviously going into that training, older clientele, they're not athletes. I've worked with athletes for the past 10 years. So it's been a challenge having that new, I kind of had to figure it out, even though my bosses are doing an awesome job of this is what to expect if you need help with anything. But there's still those little things that I either forget with each client because I have about 15 people I'm working with on and off, and now zero because we're closed. So leaves time for studying and trying to get better at training that clientele.
Sure. Yeah. So it sounds like the struggle is, I guess, connecting with people that have never really trained, trained, quote unquote, but
yes.
More so just look at it as exercise.
Yes.
I would say, as a physical therapist, that is 100% normal in the realm of what I do or what I've done, because I don't really see that many older people at this time. I treat a lot of fitness athletes and barbell athletes. But one thing I feel like is a good practice is it all starts with communication. In the sense of like connecting with them. One thing that, and I'm probably going to have to Google this, but one of my ethics professor in school taught us the frog technique.
Frog. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, let me see. It's like family, recreation, something else. I always mess this up. And then I Google it, and then it's asking me, it's telling me about how frogs breathe. But it's like, it's like family recreation, what they've done in the past, like for work, and then,
genetics or something.
No, that's interesting. I can't remember. I would say the low hanging fruit is the F and the R. So like family and recreation, like where are they from?
Right.
What do they like to do? I think talking to people about connecting what you're doing from an exercise standpoint to what they do during the day, or what they do for fun, right? You work with a lot. Do most of these people golf, or do you see the golfers separately from them?
There's a lot of golfing and golf. Tennis is very big in our population.
Yeah.
But we say, like, how do we relate their training to their daily functions, basically?
Yeah, Have you tried that?
The golf clients are easier because they want to improve their golf game.
Right.
So they tend to listen a little bit more and just go with it.
Yeah.
But more so with the women that don't play any sports or don't have any physical activities that they're pursuing every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit harder to get them to go hard, you know, to really buy in. And,
right.
So, yeah.
Because they're just playing cards.
They're playing cards. They play cards a lot. They, you know, my worries with them and their worries also as they age, and any clients, as they age, are they going to be strong enough to prevent falls? You know, how's their bone health? Because a lot of falls that happen apparently are bones breaking and then they fall.
Yeah.
Right. So I've heard that.
It could go either way.
That's kind of what we're worried about. Like if they slip, you know, is their body going to be able to catch them?
Yeah.
If I don't know, if somebody runs into them walking, are they going to fall over? Are they going to be able to catch that person? Just little things like that are kind of some of the things that we try to ask. Is their body functional for their daily routines?
Right.
Which, I mean, the 95-year-old clients that I work with, I have a 97 and a 92, maybe.
Oh, nice.
First of all, she can hold a plank for a minute, which blows my mind, but she's so into being able to hold a plank that that's what she does all the time. It's really cute. She can outplank me, actually. But then her husband just wants to play basketball, you know? Okay, great.
How old is he?
Just wants to shoot, but he's 92.
Oh gosh.
It's precious. They're my favorites. But obviously he's not out playing basketball with the guys. He's in there shooting hoops two times a week for 10 minutes.
Right.
That's what he can handle, and he's still
just shooting
nothing but net all the time. It's draining impressive.
Draining them.
Kobe. Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's a good talking point in the sense of there's a lot of good objective data in terms of, you know, fall risk and falls in general are a huge reason why old people die. And it's a big, from a medical standpoint, it's a big burden on the healthcare system, because whenever grandma falls and breaks her hip, that hip needs to be replaced within like 48 hours or she's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cause there's a big artery that runs through it, and it's a burden, right? And it costs the system a lot of money, and it's a growing problem because boomers are getting older. Mm-hmm. And,
that's what we do.
Yeah. So I would say the two from just a general strength standpoint, a really good objective measure that I've used that has some solid science to back it is the sit to stand test. Like how many sit to stands can they do in 30 seconds. And I think the cutoff is either 12 or 15. I haven't been doing it that much because I don't have that many older clientele right now. But I think anything less than 12 to 15 is in 30 seconds is actually, I think it's 12, is an increased fall risk. So you got, you got just general leg strength. You know, it's a, it's an old, I think it's Mark Ripto who first said it, which is, it's like a very meaty meathead mindset, like stronger people are harder to kill. To some degree, it is true because there is a solid link between leg strength and all rate mortality for that reason. And then the second one is walking speed. So if someone walks so slow that, you know, they're not fit for crossing the street, that is also a link to them slowing down. It's also a link to them not having good enough balance in the sense of like being able to correct if someone bumps into them, like you had said before.
Right.
And it's like, as I've seen that, I've seen with patients as walking speed decreases, their confidence decreases. Like they move more slow and deliberate, and it's not as, there's a lack of confidence. And I don't know if there's any studies to show, like, I know from current studies, the physical therapy profession is starting to move away from like balance training, because in a lot of, bigger outpatient physical therapy clinics, like those blue foam pads are a freaking dime a dozen with older people practicing balance. But a lot of people miss out on just general strength, right? And with those older ladies that don't really want to do anything and don't have necessarily activity to fit what that task that or the exercise that you're having them do, I don't talk about strength training with them. Like I talk about more, you know, you got to get out of your chair, right? This is a and I might not even call it a squat, because then they're like, oh, I can't do squats or I can't do deadlifts, but you can pick up, you have to pick up your groceries or you have to pick up your laundry basket off the ground. And that, and like talking to them about how much those things weigh. Cause like I've had ladies where I'm like, yeah, we're going to, I want to progress you up to doing deadlifts with the 55 pound kettlebell. And I'm like, and they're like, what? That's so heavy. And I'm like, how much is your granddaughter weigh? Oh, like 30 pounds. I'm like, okay, so 20 pounds off. You know, like that, like doing more in terms of exercise gives you the ability to do better in your daily tasks. I try to frame it that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And that granddaughter, they're talking about their granddaughters all the time, and all they do is grow, right? So you're going to get heavier and heavier, and bigger and bigger. And that's good stuff.
The other thing that you had mentioned was working with clients through pain. Would you say that most of these clientele that you have at the country club have some kind of associated pain?
Most of them. There is a lot of things I see are knee pain, shoulder pain, and there's two people I work with have one has a slight case of scoliosis and one is worse. So those are interesting. Those create their own pains that are not from old injuries. So those are interesting to work with. I've learned a lot about that disease. Do we call it a disease? I don't know.
Scoliosis. For scoliosis?
I mean, it's a.
I would say.
It's very interesting how it works.
Scoliosis is interesting in the sense of there's like a cutoff from a testing standpoint that, you know, that says this is like actual severe scoliosis where the spine is twisting. And like usually in most cases that's going to be found in someone who's like an 11-year-old girl. Like severe scoliosis for people where there is an actual twisting of the spine mm-hmm. that can begin to twist the spine and the ribs so much that it decreases space for your organs
yeah.
is typically happening at a younger age. And those people are typically going to have the Harrington rods, like the mm-hmm. major surgery yes. where they fuse ribs everything.
Removed.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so much ribs removed on the front end. I haven't really come in.
I have one lady who's had, I believe it's just one or two
really?
Pieces of.
Yeah. I think I lost you. You there?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
You froze for a little bit. Or did I freeze?
Yes, you froze. I was still moving on my screen anyway.
Okay. That's what it was like for mine.
It's too hot here to freeze. It's like 80 today.
So. Yeah. So with the scoliosis, I would mm-hmm. say, I always take it with a grain of salt when someone mm-hmm. tells me that, because in a lot of instances, the people, I always ask these people who told them that and how did who told them that arrive to that decision. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, and this is probably biased for me to say, but more often than not, most people that are telling me that have seen a chiropractor that just did mm-hmm. an x-ray and said, you have a little bit of twisting in your spine, therefore you have scoliosis. And I say, how did they make that decision? And they said, they just read the x-ray. And I'm like, oh, so it's not actually scoliosis. So I take it with a grain of salt.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But you know, if someone has low grade scoliosis, which mm-hmm. they probably do, I just focus on a lot of thoracic rotation stuff
mm-hmm.
and just general back strengthening. For people that even have severe scoliosis, where it's like, you could think of it kind of like a tug of war, like
mm-hmm.
the people that spines are actively twisting, you almost have to hold it in place by being strong and having muscles that are going to support it, or it's just going to kind of run away from you. And it's very odd. Like, I would say that kind of scoliosis is more along the disease, like,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Those are the two that I'm dealing with. One is more severe than the other, but they definitely mm-hmm. it's there, it's advanced for sure.
Yeah.
So
I had two chicks in my class who had scoliosis onset from whenever they were kids, and they went through a lot of therapy. There's different kinds of therapies out there. Some are kind of more out there than others.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had this chair that like had these two big leather straps that like basically bear hugged her and pulled one way versus the other.
Okay.
It was interesting. And she would have to sit in it for like 45 minutes to an hour every day as a kid. As soon as she came back from school, it's weird. I say that to say, with most of these things, just because people have a diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that it sets them up for failure, and it doesn't mean that they can't do other things, which is a big part of what I do. Is I try to help people reframe stuff. In the sense of, you know, you don't have to identify. Well, most people identify with things that are wrong with them. And it's kind of like a self-limiting type mindset because they've been told that they have this thing from someone in a position of professional power. So they kind of harbor it with them, and they take it with them everywhere they go. But you know, gentle instruction to work on things that are going to improve their function, like the thoracic rotation stuff that you do with a lot of your golfers, would apply great to a scoliosis patient, because it's going to get them to move, right? And it's going to get them stronger in that area. It's probably not going to change their scoliosis, right, but as long as someone's function is improving and their diagnosis is probably going to still be there, then you have the grounds to say, well, we didn't change your scoliosis, but your function improved. So does it really matter if you have scoliosis?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. As long as it doesn't get worse.
Right.
Worse.
The first dude to deadlift 3 times his body weight had a severe scoliosis, and his back looked like an S. Huh. But it was like the most jacked S you've ever seen. Like, this dude was freaking ginormous. I think he deadlifted like 635 pounds at 135. And he had a huge, huge scoliosis. Huh. But he had the structures to support it, you know? Have you collaborated with anyone on treating people with pain?
We have a on-site physical therapist he's not involved with us too much, but his office is in where our fitness offices are. I've spoken to him briefly, and I think I also spoke with another chiropractor who's the father of one of my athletes. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him about this lady. I was struggling to find stuff to do with her. And obviously why I struggle with her case. If she's rotated this way, mm-hmm. he was talking about loading, I guess she's rotated to the right, loading her left side so that everything on the left side is working harder basically. But, again, that's where I struggle forgetting it. And I don't know if she's going this way on top of my head. I haven't seen her in a couple weeks. Right. She's probably the patient or the client that I put the most stress into, just because she knows her body very well too. So that kind of makes it harder on me whenever she doesn't want to do something, she's not doing it because it hurts her, or she just knows, like, what's next? I'm like, shit, that's all I had planned for today. okay, come on, brain, think faster. You know what to do. And I'm like, plank. I don't know. We just did plank.
This isn't the plank lady.
No, this is another one.
Okay.
No, my plank client's awesome. She's older, much older.
So. What about side planks?
You see, that's the thing with her again. Side planks, there's different variations, but some hurt her. So
bother her shoulder.
Yeah, they bother her. And she actually does have a shoulder issue that she's going through as well. But she had a cortisone shot back in November. Oof. I want to say November, October.
My least favorite.
Thank you. No shots for me. Tattoos, fine. Shot. That
tattoos don't decrease the integrity of your tendons. Cortisone shots do.
That's valid. Yeah. The needles, though. Oh, no, thank you. So getting her to do, I went through a phase with trying to get her on a plyo ball.
Yeah.
But that, if I go the wrong way, hurts her ribs poke into her organs. So.
And she's kind of
getting
that?
Her, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
she feels, yeah, like, very, okay.
Mm-hmm, she does. But her case is more extreme than you would probably imagine. It's impressive. She's a sweetheart. She's one of my favorite clients to work with because she likes to sweat. But.
Yeah. Did she have the surgery? Like, does she have rods?
She has rods, but she's had a piece of a bone removed. I can't recall if it's 2 or 1, but I think it's in the back. I'm not sure if. I can't remember on top of my head. So she's an adventure just for my mind, you know, to be planned with her.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's where.
Have you tried carries? Comes
to. Yeah, we do a lot of kettlebell stuff at the end. Getting her loaded up here has been, I think she is at 25 pounds before the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Cause she went back north as well. She went home when this virus thing started. So getting her that. And then I think I had her carrying a 35. And I always try to make them, you grab it, you know, hold on to it. Then we'll talk about how much weight it is after you've done it.
Oh, because nice.
Then just the, they realize like, oh my God, I just carried 40 pounds. Like, yeah. You can do it. You're capable really of doing good. It. Yeah. But my other client who's lost about 50 pounds before I started working with her, mm-hmm. she carried a 50 pound kettlebell with both hands. And then I told her how much it was after she did. She's like, oh my God, that's how much weight I was carrying around on me before. I'm like, yeah, look at you now. Now you're just moving that kettlebell. That's a cool part, you know, a cool part of our job to see the light in their face when they realize what they're capable of doing.
For sure. So
that's the stuff I love. But anyway, the kettlebell carries with, we do focus on a lot of loading. My manager kind of encourages us to do that because it forces them to be up, you know, and in a functional aspect. You know, they're walking around. They can carry 20 pounds on this side at once. Yeah, that's only helping them.
For sure.
So,
Yeah. Cool. What else? Did we cover everything? I think we covered everything.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, golfers, confidence.
Did any of that conversation spark anything that you might have forgot?
No. No, I mean, I could sit here and talk about it for hours, honestly. But just the last thing I'd had was one of my struggles is seeing if they're understanding what I'm asking of them. I don't think we talked about that. So, for example, like being a prior athlete, when you're asked to fire a certain muscle or make a certain movement – and they kind of will start doing a motion and then it turns into something else.
Right.
I struggle with, and this isn't anything, when you see someone doing it wrong, you want to correct them, but you don't want to frustrate them and you don't want to discourage them.
Right.
So making sure, I guess one thing I've come up with to help that struggle is making sure their weight is lighter.
Uh-huh.
Just so they're not potentially injuring themselves by doing an improper motion and making sure they do things slowly. Because any quick motion, especially with the older client, you know, that something tears, you're done.
Yeah.
Or something pops in the wrong way that they don't like, you know, you're losing that client potentially and then injuring them, which obviously is frowned upon.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. I would say slowing it down is never going to be a bad thing. I encourage people to like, in an effort to decrease potential frustrations, I say things like, you know, doing repetitions of this, the reason that we're starting light is so you can practice. This is like learning any new skill, like and then associate that with something that they currently do. Whenever you first started golfing, it wasn't perfect. You had to shift your hips this way, you had to hold down this way and rotate that way. Associating it with just getting reps in an effort to practice typically helps all around. And then I find that with a lot of people, if they can't get it in one position, putting them in a position where it's going to challenge the same muscle group, but you're doing it in a way that's like against gravity, tends to help. So I think you had said like a chest fly type thing.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't get it in sitting, I would have them try like laying on a bench, prone on a bench, just so they feel the weight of their arm coming down. And then you're just like, oh yeah, come back there. And then they're not going to punch across the bottom of the bench.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So just put them in a different position to feel other things.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, you're already hitting it on the head with slowing it down with a lighter weight. Like repetition is the king of learning. Like they're, to some degree, they're going to have to do X amount of reps before they finally get it or before they start doing it well. And that's totally fine. But to get them, but to communicate that so they don't get frustrated on the front end is huge on your part. So if you get that locked in, then they'll just follow you until they're doing it super heavy, you know?
Yeah. That's Good point. Good. Cool.
Cool. Well, I think that's all we have. Wrapping up, we chatted about strengths and weaknesses. Seems like it all came back to, as long as you're communicating better with these people and meeting them where they're at on the front end, mm-hmm. it makes for smooth sailing on the back or going to the back end.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Moving forward, yeah. I guess gaining their trust as for well sure. is something that, you know, if somebody trusts you, they'll follow you and follow mm-hmm. your lead and listen to you. So,
yeah.
Just got to work on those other clients that are not as trusting, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah.
If you're interested in connecting with us and other coaches around the world, just like you, on a more personal level, join our Facebook group, Alineate Coaches Community, linked in the episode description. Also, if you or a friend who is a trainer are interested in joining us in a podcast, shoot us a message after joining. We'd love to chat.